Victory or death!
Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Reardon, the voice of freedom behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, bringing you the Patriots, the information you need to stay in the fight to preserve your liberty. This is episode 24-3, the third episode of 20... the third episode of 2024, 24-3, and... We are going to talk about some of the stuff that's going on. Nothing at this time has been passed. Only what is going on here? Only the bills. Okay, so here's where we're at. We're at crossover time. What that means is all the bad bills that the Democrats passed in the House, they get sent over to the Senate for review. And all the bad bills that the Democrats passed in the Senate get sent over to the House for review that crosses over. All those bills cross over. The Democrats did a sneaky little thing this year. They pretended, we're going to work together. We're going to be bipartisan. Hey, you Republicans, you can be on these committees too. Oh, yeah, sure, you can have these committee assignments that you want. There you go. You're not going to be in charge, but you can be there. And then proceeded to shoot down every single good bill and pass every single bad bill. And I do mean pretty much every single. I think they're at the $15 minimum wage. We've got the assault weapons ban. All kinds of three-day waiting period, five-day waiting period. All the stuff I've talked about previously. They passed it all. And all the good stuff. Constitutional carry. Lots of really good gun bills that would have clarified the law. And made not necessarily carrying easier, but carrying... more clear about where you could carry and where you couldn't. No, we don't want any of those. They even shot down one that was a bill that would have punished you more if you used a gun in a crime, because we don't want to punish criminals. We only want to punish the law-abiding citizens of the Commonwealth. Here is Nick Freitas talking about that exact thing. And he is going to explain how the unintended consequence of a certain bill is that he could effectively be a criminal. Let's listen to what he's got to say.
Delegate Freitas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Will the delegate yield for a question?
The delegate yield.
I yield.
Delegate yield.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask the delegate, let's say in a situation in my district, you live in a rural county, police are, maybe 20 minutes away at best. When something dangerous is happening, and I have one of my children, 16, 17 years old, who have been trained how to properly handle firearms, properly use firearms since they were younger. If someone is kicking in the door to get to one of my children when I'm not there, and they access a firearm in order to defend themselves because they're under the age of 18, am I now a criminal if this bill goes into effect?
Mr. Speaker, I would answer the delegate that the scenario that I'm far more concerned about, and the one that's far more common, is when these 16 and 17-year-old children who have access to those firearms use them to harm themselves. And that is something that we see happening frequently, and it's not hypothetical. It's not rare or uncommon. It's something that happens on an all-too-regular basis. And no amount of training and familiarity with firearms can stop that from happening when someone is using the firearm as it was intended, which is to cause a fatal injury, which is what's happening in many of these suicide cases. And so I would say to the delegate that there are circumstances where you've got to make sure children are safe. There could be other ways you could defend it, but I think that the question is misplaced, and really what we ought to be focused on is the far more frequent cases where these improperly stored firearms are being used by children and teenagers to harm themselves, to harm others, to take them to school, and perpetuate heinous acts. And I think that's the far larger concern, and that's what we should be focused on. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker.
Delegate from Culpeper, Delegate Freitas.
Speaking to the bill.
The delegate has the floor.
So let me go ahead and translate that. The answer is yes. Yes. If someone breaks into my house when I'm not there, and my 16-year-old daughter accesses a firearm that she's been trained how to handle and shoot in order to defend herself from someone that's going to hurt her, maybe someone that was let out of parole early, I'm now a criminal. That's the reality of this. Now, I understand that we can definitely share concerns with respect to people misusing firearms, but one of the things that I know I've tried to stress when we look at this is that there's two different ways that we can approach the way that we interact with our constituents. We can say that we live in a free society and we expect people to behave responsibly. And if they don't behave responsibly, there's punishments for that. Especially when another person gets hurt or when they hurt themselves, there's punishments for that. Or we can tell them, we're going to restrict your ability to do something which is not immoral or wrong or inherently harming to another person. We can just say that we want to be so preventative because we're concerned that you might do something wrong or something bad might happen, so now we're going to take away your right to do something. There is a very direct line between what we do in this building when we restrict our constituents from being able to do something and then they get harmed in the process. I would argue that there is a very, very direct line in culpability on our behalf when we deny them access to do this. And what we're essentially saying right now, Mr. Speaker, is that in an attempt to prevent certain things from happening, which can be prevented in other ways, we're now going to create a scenario to where your 16-year-old, your 17-year-old, and this is not hypothetical, this happens. If they have to protect themselves, you're now a criminal in the process. Mr. Speaker, I hope that we will not vote to engross the bill and move it on to its third reading.
So there you go. And that was HB 183, and that was Marcus Simon, who Delegate Freitas had to translate, because the Democrats don't tell the truth. They lie, and they deflect, and they lie some more. And so the only way you can... I love what he did there. He didn't clarify. He's like, yeah, okay, so I'm just going to translate what he just said to you. This is what... Yeah, the answer is yes. I will be a criminal. Now, they could have wrote this bill in such a way that would have left an out for a situation like that, but they didn't do that. Now, you're allowed to use deadly force regardless of what the law is to defend your life. So legally, I'm not so sure how this would hold up. But I wouldn't doubt if you lived in Fairfax, Alexandria, Henrico, one of these more liberal places, that you're going to get charged with a crime because that's what they do there. And so anytime you interact with, your daughter is there, and there's a dead body on the floor, and the cops show up, lawyer. That's what you say, lawyer. That's what you say even in a conservative area, lawyer. I want a lawyer. Look, I'm willing to cooperate, willing to, you know, answer questions with a lawyer. But I'm not going to, this guy broke into our house, I'm not going to say anything else. Lawyer, that's what I'm going to say, lawyer. And so, yeah, there you go. It's really frustrating because we have these Democrats they're nuts. They're absolutely nuts. And here's the frustrating part. When they get one vote majority, which I think they're like a two-vote majority in the House and a one-vote majority in the Senate, they go nuts. And they act as if they're the lords and kings of us all, and start issuing these royal decrees. And there is nothing that can be done to stop them, except for the fact that we have, well, there's things that we can do to stop them. There's Patriot stuff, but nobody's doing that. And so at the moment, the only thing to stop them is Governor Youngkin. And for the most part, I think we'll be okay there. But the guy is kind of a wimp. So I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen what is going to happen. You remember what I've talked about, Gourmelts, and how the Virginia ABC raided them and took all their alcohol and took all their receipts and were raiding their, you know, records. And you know, you were selling alcohol without your license. Well, the license was taken away illegally because of the COVID mandates and all kinds of other stuff. So, yes. And then the governor, only after there was a backlash, stepped in. This should have been immediate. The governor should have stepped in prior to this happening, but he didn't. So I don't have a lot of confidence in his, you know, being a strong leader in anything. So we'll see what happens there. But so there's that. That's HB 183. Let's look that up here. HB 183. And what we'll do is we'll type in HB 183 into Legis. That's the LIS.virginia.gov website, HB 183. And, oh, darn it. What it does is, this is so lame with this website. If you're doing a search, you actually have to go into the current year, 2024 bills, and then go from there, you can find HB 183. So we'll go into 2024 session, bills and resolutions. Now we can search to, let's see, it was 184, I believe. 183, it was 183. So we'll type a 183. And their system is broken at the moment. Well, let's try. So it's the other thing. You know, the system is designed poorly. So we'll type in HB. And there it is. Firearm storage in residence for minors or persons prohibited. Let's see where it's at right now. It vote. Yep, it passed the House. 51 to 49. Exactly along party lines. So 51 to 49 said, yeah, thumbs up to this. You still think we can solve this by voting harder? This isn't the only bill that I've talked about that has passed. The majority, almost all of them, have passed the House, and they've been sent to the Senate. And then they get to the, what happens is, then they go to the Senate. They go to the Senate Courts of Justice Committee. It gets passed out of that. The Senate then votes for it, and then it gets sent to the governor. It's a real simple process. You can watch how a bill is made. There's the old, after school? I don't remember, but you all know what I'm talking about. It's this old cartoon about how a bill is made. And that's how a bill is made. And then the governor looks at it and goes, no, I'm going to veto this. And if there's enough votes in the House and the Senate, which there isn't, it can be over, you know, they could vote to overturn the veto and pass the bill anyway. In this case, there's too close of a margin, so the governor can veto it. But we have this tendency in Virginia to flip-flop back and forth. Democrats, Republicans, as governor. But we seem to have a tendency lately, because of the way that they've drawn the lines in the districts across Virginia, they tried to draw them a different way. The courts, again, well, we're going to solve this in the courts. Nope. Because the courts then said, oh, well, here's the lines that you have to have, because this is more equitable. You know, this is more fair. We don't want this minority group over here or this special interest group over there to be disenfranchised or whatever. And so this is the way it is. And so now we have a 51, you know, Democrat majority. It might be 52. Maybe one Democrat voted for against this thing. I don't know. Actually, no, that wouldn't work. So, yeah, it's 51-49. So, what are you going to do? You're going to keep pretending that voting is the solution? Do you think that coming up here with this election, but with the drooling idiot against Trump, and the drooling idiot, so let's say he wins, and I say that in quotes, wins, you think that that isn't just intentional slap in the face? The powers that be in the elites, they put these people up, like you know, this guy Marcus Simon. You got Delegate Morrissey. I don't think he's around anymore. I'm not sure, but the guy was elected, reelected, while in jail for having sex with his underage intern, who he fathered children with. And they reelected him, because that's the evil of the Democrats. And you seem to think this is more than just, you know, communism. These people are also very stupid. But you can't. Yeah, what do you expect? But I think my point in that little rambling rant there was, when is it time to do patriot stuff? If you think that you're just going to vote your way out of this or sue your way out of this, One, you shouldn't have to. Governments are instituted among men to preserve life, liberty, and property. That's what they're there for. And when they don't do that, they're not doing what they were put there to do. And it is your duty to throw off those shackles. It's your duty. If not for you, then for your family, for your kids, for your grandkids, it's your duty. And we're not doing our duty. We're just sitting here. Well, you know, the next election will fix it. And it's that carrot that they put out in front of you. Here, little donkey, come on just a little bit further, little donkey. It's a little bit further down this road. That's not a cliff up ahead. Never mind that. You know, just keep going. You're going to get this carrot anytime. Now, we've been here before. We have been here in America before with this kind of leadership before. A lot of these things aren't new. But we were also a different people, and we've had different circumstances that have shifted things over the years. You know, look at the Great Depression. Look at FDR's New Deal and some of the communist Marxist stuff that was going on there. You know, they would tell you, you can't have chickens, or you can only have this many chickens. And, you know, that stuff was going on. Well, you're impacting. You can't grow your own wheat because you'll be impacting the farmer that grows wheat. How dare you? So I got this great thing my mom shared, and it says, imagine we lived in a world where all cars were EVs, and then along comes a new invention, the internal combustion engine. Think how they would sell it. A vehicle, half the weight, half the price, that will almost a quarter the damage done to the road. A vehicle that can be refueled in 1/10 of the time and has a range of up to 4 times the distance in all weather conditions. It does not rely on environmentally damaging use of non-renewable rare earth elements to power it. And it uses far less steel and other materials. Just think how excited people would be for such a technology. It would sell like hotcakes. There's some great videos. There's a guy trying to take a Rivian from New Jersey to Florida. I only got about halfway through because he really should have trimmed it down a little bit. But he was at, he would go and he would find, and he was documenting the whole process. Okay, well, I have to find a charging station. And then he's off in way off in some, you know, hood area. He's like, well, I don't even know where I am, you know, and he's driving around and he gets there and the thing is broken. And then he's like, oh no. And so he goes to another one and on and on and on this process goes. But, you know, it's not all it's cracked up to be. Oh, and I saw another one. The way the Rivian was designed, this one had a dent on the rear near the headlight. And they said it was going to cost, and I think this is a little ridiculous, $40,000 to repair it. And I think that's because of the way that I've seen other ways the dents are repaired. It's pretty amazing. They have all kinds of technology to repair dents. There's these dent guys. You know, that's all they do is dents. And I saw this guy do one on a Ford F-150, which is aluminum. Very similar kind of a dent size in a very similar weird place up on the up by the rear of the cab, and was able to fix it. So I think this probably could have been the same situation with the Rivian. But the way the Rivian is designed, it is one giant, essentially unibody body panel piece. You know, it goes all the way from the rear all the way to the cab. It's all one piece. So you can't just pop a new panel off and pop a new one. Like say a Honda, if your rear bumper is messed up, you just put a new bumper on it and repaint it, and abracadabra, you're done. Speaking of bumpers, my wife scratched her front one. She comes home and says, can we just put some touch-up paint on that? I'm like, no. Is it not really? I mean, this is a metallic white paint. It's not like I can just go get some white paint and spray it on there. I'll be able to, you know, help, maybe fix it up a little, but it'll never be as good as it was. And also the metal panel of the front of the car was also slightly bent. I think I can pull that out with a suction cup without too much trouble. But the other thing, the paint, I mean, just some of it was scratched down in the metal. I said, well, no. But I mean, it happens. I'm not mad at her. I've broken both my taillights on my RV back. You know, I've got a travel trailer and took the turn too sharp going left once. broke the taillight. Took the turn too sharp. Going right, broke the taillight. Like, darn it. And I look, fortunately, I can replace the taillight. I've got a dent now on the upper part of the bed, but, you know, what are you going to do? I can't really fix that. I'm sure a body guy could. Anyway, like to thank Hopkins Real Estate for sponsoring this episode. If you're looking for land or a house, whatever you're looking, a commercial property in the, and Hopkins is located in Forest, Virginia, but services, you know, a good ways, I mean, anywhere in Virginia, but, you know, good ways around all the way out to Nelson County, you know, Roanoke, Amherst, Lynchburg, Bedford, Campbell County, anywhere in there. You're looking for a team of real estate agents that's going to take really good care of you, then get in touch with Hopkins and they will, take good care of you. And it's, been a good experience working with them. I've used them myself, and good people. So get in touch with Hopkins Real Estate at adamhopkins.net. All right, I want you to hear this rant that Nick Freitas went on. I know I share a lot with Nick because he's just a good communicator. He's got a great podcast called Making the Argument. I'll talk a little bit about something I was listening to the other day, but I want you to hear what he is talking about here when in regards to the government schools.
I had told you that there was going to be an active push to keep these sort of pornographic materials in your children's public school library, they would have said, Nick, you're being ridiculous. Nobody wants to do that. And then they would gaslight you the moment that you proved that they did want to do it.
I, Carl V. Frisch, do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
Those books he was sworn in on. Well, they've been banned in several districts for depicting things like underage gay porn.
One book describes a fourth grade boy performing on an adult male.
I'm a little alarmed by this guy. Does he make you suspicious?
I understand why parents are mad. I don't understand why they're surprised anymore. This is not a bug. This is a feature of the agenda. And you have individuals like this who, like you just described, are far less interested in their reading and writing and their ability to comprehend mathematics and far more interested in exposing your 13-year-old to pornography in their public school library. If you can, pull your kids out of schools, because that guy won with 65% of the vote and he's not done.
I've talked about this a lot of times and I know that it's not possible for some of you to do it, but, or maybe it is. I'll get to that in a sec here. But you need to pull your kids out of these government schools. You know, maybe private school's not possible for you, but homeschool might be, especially if you've got a teenager. Let's say you've got a teenager, even a middle school teenager. Let's say you've got a seventh grader. That seventh grader can learn on his own with very little input from you. I'm not advocating, and you should look at Making the Argument's got a great podcast where Nick interviews Matt Boudreau, who's a guy who started his own special schools, kind of like the Montessori schools. Totally different way of doing school. It's really cool sounding and everything. But look, I did homeschool. Homeschooled my boys for on and off at least 6, maybe 8 years. No, it wasn't 8. It was at least 6 of their years of school. And then we put them into a private school. And the reason for that was a couple things. We had the financial resources to do it if I went back to work. And that led to other things we were able to do financially, like buy a house again and stuff like that. But it wasn't easy. Homeschooling wasn't easy in that there was a financial and a time and an emotional expense that was associated with it. Now, in my case, I was the one doing the homeschooling. And I've seen this. I'm not the only guy that's done this. With the world that we live in, it's really interesting because we've got women who have gotten an education and men who haven't. So if you've got an education, you can make more money. Well, my wife is able to make infinitely more money than I was working as a laborer in any field. So, and this has changed recently. But, I mean recently in that, you know, laborers actually can get paid really well in lots of trades. But my point is that there's opportunity for you as somebody who's thinking about this maybe to do this. Now, you don't have to quit your job. Maybe you could go to 30 hours a week and your kids are capable of being home by themselves during the day and you can homeschool them. You don't need the state's permission for this. Did you know that? There's a great conference that's done called a Great Homeschool Convention, and I believe it's in South Carolina. They do them in other places, but the, primarily where I'm familiar with them is South Carolina. And you can learn a lot by going to one of these conferences. They have, you know, workshops and seminars you can learn how to do things. But here's what I would say if you're thinking about doing this. Don't recreate the school environment. You don't have to. Especially for boys. If you've got boys, you know the greatest thing about educating boys is they're very task-oriented. So what I would do at the beginning of the week is I would pull all the files for all the work they had to do for the week, and I'd put it in a folder, and I would say, here's what you have to do. And I had a little list on Monday. You have to do this much on Tuesday, you know, all the way through. And they were done with their work every day. They would get up around 9, and they were done by noon every day. And when they went into the private school, they had to be, you know, tested for placement just to make sure that they were up to speed on things, and they tested just fine. And I was hands-on at the time. I was helping and sitting down with my younger son who, you know, had some issues with not really math per se, but reading. He just struggled with reading. He's always never been a strong reader. And I had to help him a little more with that and with things like history and whatnot. But that was fun. It was awesome. I got to spend time with my kids. You know, we got to take a vacation down to Isle of Palms at the beach. We rented a house down there, and the place was practically abandoned, the whole town, because it was the first week of school and everyone was in school. No one was taking a beach vacation except us homeschoolers. There's a lot of benefit to homeschooling. You have children that I think are raised by their parents instead of raised by 30 other kids who are coming home with all kinds of bad stuff that they're learning. And that can be true, not necessarily always true, but that can be true at private schools as well. So, you know, but you're going to have to make sacrifices. That's what you're going to have to do. But if you think that you can send your kids to the Roman school and not have them come home be Romans, I'm sorry, you're crazy. You've got some weird cognitive disconnect there that is not healthy, because you can't do it. You just can't. It's statistically proven out that it's impossible. Your children will come home like the picture of that society that is being educated to them and that they're surrounded by. Guaranteed. And this is true. If you look at, you know, you go get send kids go to the Catholic school or even some private schools. They come home like the other kids for the most part. So in a lot of that, it can be countered by you being involved in your kids' lives on a regular basis, but most parents aren't. If they're honest with themselves, they know they're not. And so, I don't know. So let's look at this. What could you do? If this was something you had to do, you know, what could you do? Well, you could, you can cut back on your expenses. There are ways to do that, and you know there are. Okay, I get that you have a boat payment or an RV payment or, you know, a vacation rental payment, or, you know, whatever, you know, vacation home that you've got, whatever these things are. I get that you have those. And if some of those can generate revenue, great. I mean, to me, I don't know how you would have a vacation home at the beach house and not be renting it out Airbnb. That you'd be, well, we have to work because, you know, I've got to pay for that. Why? You could be making a fortune renting that thing out. I don't understand people that do that junk, but understand that you can't necessarily rent out your ATV or your jet skis or your boats or whatever. You could get rid of them. Oh, can't believe you said that, Hank. Yeah, I did say that. You know, you're not on this earth to have fun and do what you want to do. Not when you have kids. You have a responsibility to them. And your number one responsibility is make sure they don't end up as communists and Romans. That's your number one job. You know, and frankly, I don't know if you're listening to this podcast, I'm probably preaching to the choir here for a lot of people, but, you know, this idea that you're going to send your kid to the government school. Ugh. I went to the government school. Man, I went, you know, in California. I know the propaganda they were shoveling, but it was pretty tame compared to what they got going on now. You know, and it's not even the teachers as much in some areas that are shoveling this stuff. It's the other kids. Well, you got to be pro-trans. You got to be pro-gay. You got to be pro-communist. You know, you got to be pro-Hamas. You know, all these things. Come on. Really? What are you doing? Take your kids out of these schools. Yeah, it's going to mean sacrifice. One of you is probably going to have to work less. One of you are going to make less money. Yeah, I've been there. You know, it's not great. But there's a lot of side hustles that you can do. There are. I mean, you could do DoorDash. You could do pizza delivery. You could do, second or third shift at Sheetz. I'm just saying there are things you could do. They're not going to be as great as whatever it is you're probably doing now. I'm not going to make as much money, but it would cover that gap, and you could pull your kids out of that school. And, you know, it's just, it's possible. You could move out into the rural area where it's cheaper to buy. It's cheaper to live. And it's tricky right now with the interest rates being what they are, but, you know, there's options. There really are options. And so my point here in all this is saying that if the options are there, and if you're going to pretend they're not, then that's the answer. When you say you can't, you're right, you can't. When you say you can, you find a way. There's your little motivational thing. Just do it. Do it. Look what they're doing to you, kids. Gee whiz. Yeah, you can find such cool stuff on Instagram. I know it can be a time suck, but there's a lot of really cool things out there. Let's take a look at some of the cool stuff that I've found lately. Check this out.
My lawyer just called and asked if I was ready for court tomorrow. I said, hell yeah. I ain't going. See, I've been spending the last 6 months booby trapping my entire 500 acres. I got snake pits, rolling logs, bear traps. I got some straight up Indiana Jones. I got a boulder that'll fall down when you open my front door. I got about 120 coyotes that I trained to bite anything with their crew cut and a badge. I flew an old Vietnamese man out here, and he helped me dig about 12 miles worth of underground tunnels. I have 450 cameras I bring to solar panels all around this country. I got a Bengal tiger locked in my bathroom, killed for a pork chop right now. You know, it's surprisingly easy to teach a raccoon how to loosen lug nuts and cut brake lines. I'd rather live the rest of my life in the woods living off in wild ginseng creek water than go to jail one more time.
So, I had to bleep out some stuff there, but it was pretty funny. my lawyer called, said I ain't going. This one, I think, encapsulates a lot of what's going on in society. You watched The Hunger Games and sided with the resistance. You watched Divergent and sided with the resistance. If you've watched those, they're great books, by the way. When it's fiction, you understand, yet you refuse to see it when it's the reality you're living in. Wild. That's very true, isn't it? I mean, you look around, and a lot of us are kind of red-pilled. And if you've watched The Matrix, you know what that means. I mean, we took the red pill, and now we see. I'm like, I don't wish I could get plugged back in, but sometimes ignorance is bliss. I get it. But gosh, it's so amazing to me. There's people, they could quote every sports stat of probably most teams, and certainly all of the like A-list players on teams, and all this guy has this many yards, and he's this best, and he's so good at this, and he can kick the ball this far, and all that stuff. But don't know who the dang vice president is. That was ridiculous. I mean, did you see the latest speech that she gave? I'm not kidding you. It had that phrase that she loves. She had, I don't know if she had the Passage of Time one in there, but she had the Unburdened by What Has Been. And I was thinking about this. I'm like, you know, if I was going to program a robot to just say things, I think I'd give it more phrases than the Teddy Ruxpin had. Because goodness gracious, she's like a broken record. She says the same thing all the time. How can you be that dumb? And that's what I think, you know, that maybe she's a robot. Maybe they've perfected this technology. I don't know. Maybe she's a holographic projection, you know, like Stargate. The Asgard are real and they're just really beaming her down and she talks and says things and they're just not very good at it. Not good at talking English. They just have her say the same speech again. Or maybe people are so stupid that follow her and they don't care that we know. They don't care that we see. They're just like, oh, people that follow her will never know.
Bites are psychopaths, and their behavior represents an underlying biologically transmitted proclivity with roots deep in their evolutionary history. There's no discussion about the delusion and the perversion of whiteness. Say this with me. Rape culture in America is a legal, economic, and moral institution. And I'm not seeking agreement from white people at all. I think whites are psychopathic. I think there are many lies. The level of lying that white people do that has started since colonialism, we're just used to it. And if you're sitting here, you're going, wow, he sounds really pro-black. I am.
You're not pro-black. You're just being racist. Ladies and gentlemen, when did it become so normal to be an outspoken racist? This has been happening for a while. We all know it. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Dante King at University of San Francisco, California. Okay, so nobody's surprised. However, as a foreigner in this country, as an immigrant in this country, I cannot tell you the sour taste that I have in my mouth every time I hear this. The same people that are allegedly fighting racism, that are allegedly fighting for inclusion, diversity, they allegedly are the party of love is love, are the ones that are attacking a particular race for the acts and atrocities from years ago. And somehow that's acceptable. Now, do me a favor, reverse the roles. Have a white person give a speech like this, calling black people white psychopaths. I'm not calling black people white psychopaths, I'm just making a comparison. Because if a white person would say anything remotely similar to that, they would lose their job, they would be doxxed, they would be shadow banned, their accounts would be taken down. And the entire nation would revolt against them. However, because it's a black person saying it, I guess it's acceptable.
So that was this guy on Instagram called Conservative Immigrant. And I think he's from Poland or Czechoslovakia or someplace. It's really great. And his commentary is really good. And he always has something interesting to talk about. But it's totally, don't you see that? Don't you kind of feel that? You hear this stuff and you're just like, oh, what a racist. And I think we were on track prior to Barack Obama to probably being a colorblind culture. Honestly, back, I moved here in 2008 to Virginia. And in my life, I had never experienced racism, never saw it, never, certainly was never the one perpetuating it. I never had a problem with any of the Vietnamese friends that I had, the Filipino friends that I had, the Mexican friends that I had, the other Latino friends that I had. I never had any black friends because, you know, in California, you would think that there's a lot. And there are if you're in Compton or Oakland. But there really wasn't a lot in San Jose. I mean, I think our high school, which had something like 4,000 kids, it was ridiculously huge. I think there's only like 20 or 30. So it wasn't like, you know, we had any real issue with any race, though. We were just all a bunch of kids. And then I come here, and I order something from, I think it was Arby's. And this woman, the look on her face, when I pulled up to the window, may I help you? I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, she looked like she wanted to kill me. I don't know what I did. And it took me a little while, and it wasn't the only time that I experienced that. And my point in all this is the racism I see is coming from the black community. I've lived here. this whole time. Never had anyone come up to me and go, hey, buddy, I know you're a good patriot and you want to come over here to our Klan meeting. We're going to go burn some crosses and put on these white hoods and go do some stuff to the black folks. I never heard that. Not once. No one's ever approached me. No one's even like hinted at it. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Here's our secret handshake. Nothing. No one has ever approached me with that. Have I had a few people be racist in comments and some different things? Sure. Most of them are anti-Semitic, which is weird. You know, the Jews did this and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, occasionally some other stuff. But it was very weird. Almost artificial. But on the black folks side, I've seen a lot of racists over there. And you can't call them out on it. And they flip their lid if you call them out. So, yeah. And that stuff's going on everywhere, by the way. That's all the universities, pretty much. They've got this whole... they got somebody there talking about how evil Whitey is. And that's some old school racism. That's some Black Panther level racism. Goes way back. And what it is it's part of this. You have to have... There's victim and there's oppressor. And that's how Marxism frames all its arguments. And so there's victim and oppressor. Victim is the minority of any kind. Whether you're the less than 0.00001% of our society that would call themselves trans. If you're less than 1% of the society who would call themselves gay. If you're, I don't know, 30, 40, you know, not even 30, probably 10 to 20% of our society who's black and, you know, you're a victim automatically. And if you're a larger group, you're the ones in power, the ones in charge, you're evil and you're the oppressor. There's oppressed and oppressor. That's all there is. And that's where this is coming from. It's a critical theory model. It's lots of other complicated things I'm not going to get into because it's just too big. Making the argument talks a lot about these. And it does a really good job of unpacking and explaining this stuff. So, yeah, racism is real. But I think we are on track to getting rid of it. This wasn't a thing. And then Barack Obama got in and all the race pimps and hustlers got in and they started just ginning all this stuff up and they, you know, programming their own community to hate white people. And eventually there's a backlash where I'm like, I don't care anymore. I'm not interested in participating in this anymore. I'm not interested in participating in Black History Month and celebrating you at all because you hate my guts. So screw you. You hate me. So fine. Bye. And I think that's where we are in a lot of things. I was listening to Making the Argument the other day, and they were talking about the divide between young men and young women, specifically the Gen Z and the lower end of the millennials, is they're doing surveys, and they're finding that the women all identify as very liberal, and the men all identify, and I'm saying all. When I say all, I mean the majority. All identify as very conservative. So let's say the number is 60% identify as conservative men, and only 30% of women identify as conservative or even neutral. That means that the 60% of men have a very small pool of women that they could find commonality with. And so the problem is that where this leads to in society is you have a whole group of people who are just like, forget it, I'll just go play video games. Then we don't meet girls. Men don't meet girls. Men don't get married. Men don't have babies. Society falls apart. And this could be by design. I don't know. I know that the reason these girls are identifying as liberal is it's cultural. It's educational. You know, they're programmed this way, and the guys are pushing back because the guys are told you're useless, you're garbage, you're only good for digging ditches, and you know, ooh, you're gross, you want sex, and you know, all these things. And so the men go, well, then screw you. You know, how about I don't dig your ditches? How about I don't landscape your yard? How about I don't work on this high-rise structure? They talk about this stupid thing where, you know, well, we need to diversify as in they want more women in certain jobs. Women don't want to work on the high rise. And if they did, they're welcome to do it. But they don't. Men, you know, frankly, men don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a steel worker. That's hard work. But there are only people that want to do that are men. Oil workers, almost all men. Pilots, mostly men. Now, they want to do all this like stupid diversity garbage in the airline industry. Matt Walsh was talking about this, really funny. Had audio of some of these things talking about how they want to get other people, have this plan from, it was great. It was called the flight line to cockpit path. And as in they want to take the people that are the baggage handlers and give them a path if they want it to get up into the cockpit and be a pilot. Do we have let's say at the hospital, this is a great analogy he gave. Do we have a plan at the hospital to make, to get the janitor? We have a janitor to surgeon plan. Do we have that plan? No, we don't. We want the best to be surgeons. We want the best to be doctors. Why don't we want the best to be pilots? I do. I don't care. I don't even, you know, very often the door's closed. You don't get to see who the pilot is. I could care less. You know what I want him to be? Qualified. That's what I want him to be. I don't care what color he is. He can be, you know, whatever. What I want him to be is competent and capable and qualified. I want him to be able to speak with clear English so that he can communicate with the tower and know what he's supposed to be doing and how he's supposed to be getting there. And instead, we're seeing this increase in aviation-related issues because they've been doing this dumb diversity push. So we're already midway through February. I just turned 50. So now I'm officially old. It was interesting when I was approaching 50. I was really depressed. I was like, oh no, this is it. You know, as soon as I hit 50, I was like, okay, it's all right. Now I can be that wiser, slightly older man that people come to it for advice. Before I hit 60, and I'm the irrelevant old man who needs to shut the heck up. So I got 10 years, man. This is gonna be great. 10 years where people are gonna listen to what I have to say. We'll see. We'll see if that's true or not. But we're halfway through the month of February, and it is it's strange. You know, we've got this weird, somewhat nice weather today. Right now, as I'm recording this, it's 41 degrees. Now, I would actually like to have some really sub-zero temperatures come in for about 2-3 weeks. I know some of you don't like that. Let's kill all the bugs, then we'll have a really nice summer and spring, and just gonna be beautiful. But spring's almost here. For those of you warm weather lovers, I hate it. I'll take the cold any day. I like, this is my kind of weather. But anyway, remember, you were not made to fit in, you were born to stand out. I'm Hank Reardon, this is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.